This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Digital manufacturing takes off.
With special guest editor John Kirkley.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for August 5th, 2011, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Hey, good morning, Michael. How you doing?
Good. You sound like you're in the middle of something strange out there. Where exactly are you?
I got a little background noise here. I'm a worldwide analyst, Michael. I was coming from Germany a couple weeks ago. Then we did one in Brazil. I'm now coming from you from the HPC epicenter of the world, which is the boardwalk in Ocean City, New Jersey.
Ocean City, New Jersey. Okay, I thought I heard some seagulls back there. Okay, very good.
You'll hear the occasional seagull, the occasional kids, the amusement park rides, airplanes going by. This is I'm doing very important research here this week.
Okay, very good. Well, on the road again. Excellent. So we also have with us John Kirkley, managing editor of Digital Manufacturing Report, one of HPC Wire's affiliate publications, which actually was launched back in early June. John's on the line. For our listeners who might not be aware of our new publication, John, why don't you just give us a little overview of what you guys are doing there?
Can I say hi to John first?
Oh,
hey,
sorry.
John, how's it going?
Hello there, Addison. Yeah, you sound like you're having a great time. You're in the manufacturing heart of the world there.
I am.
The boardwalk in Ocean City.
Someone had to build all these boards.
Michael, thank you. Very happy to be here this morning. Very quickly, DMR, the Digital Manufacturing Report, is now exactly 2 months old.
Okay.
We're brand new. We're still in diapers.
Congratulations on the launch there, John, and I'll be pleased to be a contributing editor there from time to time myself.
Well, that's great, Addison. Absolutely. But just very quickly, the Digital Manufacturing Report is really talking to a very wide audience, and we're covering a very wide part of the industry. So we're looking at the 300,000 manufacturers in the United States. There's about 2 million worldwide. We're looking at the large companies like P&G and GM and Boeing, and also the small to medium-sized vendors, what we're calling, the missing middle, and, of course, the vendors in the ISVs. So we are casting a very wide net, and there's a lot to cover. For example, cloud computing, hardware, software, modeling and simulation, product lifecycle management. You get the idea. Lots going on.
Well, John, manufacturing has been, a huge area, and we look at both the traditional auto, aero, aerospace manufacturing, the large product manufacturing category, as well as the more emerging consumer product manufacturing category. And when you combine both of those, it's the largest commercial segment just ahead of finance. So I'm sure you got your hands full with a lot of interesting applications.
It's great stuff. And as you know, Addison, President Obama announced the Advanced Manufacturing Partnership just a short time ago.
That's right. Michael and I discussed that very briefly during a previous podcast, but what was your take on it?
Well, this really puts the spotlight on advanced manufacturing. All of a sudden, there's a lot of initiatives going on out there, and his announcement can really help them.
We've been looking at some of the initiatives, like the Endemic Initiative through the United States Council on Competitiveness, which has its Midwest Pilot Program. There's the Alliance for High Performance Digital Manufacturing, which has been organized by a lot of groups throughout the industry, the National Center for Manufacturing Sciences that we've partnered with to do a lot of research around the missing middle, has started a strategic interest group around helping people adopt digital manufacturing. So any number of vendor-based initiatives where the vendor community is trying to tap into how they sell more technology and services to companies who are trying to adopt digital manufacturing.
So, by the way, the NCMS, the National Center for Manufacturing Sciences, is a partner of the Digital Manufacturing Report, and they're providing editorial to us on a regular basis. So we're working with them very closely in trying to get this advanced manufacturing techniques out to the small and mid-sized manufacturers.
Yep, Rebecca Taylor over there is doing a great job. We've had John Riley on as a guest of our podcast before. He's been a great partner to Intersect 360 Research as well.
Yeah, John and I are going to start up a podcast in a little while. It'll be the John and John Show. So we'll be doing that. Anyway, lots going on. I just signed up another contributing editor, a fellow named Harry Moser, who's a retired CEO of a manufacturing company, and he's come up with a thing called the Reshoring Initiative. And what Harry's come up with, he has come up with a TCO calculator. And what manufacturers in the U.S. can do is actually get the true cost of what they're really spending to offshore their manufacturing capabilities. It's a lot more than they think. And once they run this TCO calculator, in many instances, they find out that it's cheaper to build in the U.S. What Harry is trying to do, and a lot of other people working with him, is to reshore manufacturing, bring it back to the U.S.
You know, that's a real interesting story, because you always hear about the conventional wisdom about manufacturing, that it's all being offshored, and that's the way it has to go because pricing's so low in China and India and these other countries. So, I mean, that's a good story to bring to attention, just like sort of like the Obama story. People didn't realize that there's a lot going on in sort of the advanced manufacturing space that I think the general public is just not aware of. So it's good that you guys are reporting on things like this. People, the news out there is not covering this. Obviously, the general news press is not covering stuff like this. So it's good to see this stuff out there now. So, John, why don't you tell us, I know I've been reading a lot of the applications you've been writing about over the past couple months. One that was really interesting to me, and I didn't realize this, and I should have, but Los Alamos and I guess Procter & Gamble have hooked up together, and they're working on something, or they've actually been working on codes for a while now, right?
They've been actually working together for about 10 years.
Wow, okay.
So that's a very interesting industry lab partnership. And, of course, what they're doing, naturally, is computational fluid dynamics. You know, those diapers, they're tricky. Yeah. So that is part of what they've been doing at Los Alamos. They've been building up a CFD library, computational fluid dynamics library, really since 1945, when they had the first atomic test there.
Well, that's an interesting segue from weapon simulations into diapers. I mean,
That's the headline in the story, from detonations to diapers.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, the thing is, you get the ha-ha factor from that, but the fact of the matter is there are a lot of applications for which the absorption of fluids is interesting, right? And for Procter & Gamble, it's money. And for, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers or somebody, it might be defense-related or some other military application. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that there would be a collaboration of that sort. We've also seen similar collaborations between entertainment and government in the past with things like building real-time simulators. They're realistic. So that kind of technology transfer, I think, is very good for government and industry together. It can be a real win-win.
Well, it's really great. And also, what's going on is that as part of the President Obama's Advanced Manufacturing Partnership, P&G and Los Alamos will be making these codes available to anybody who wants them. They can download them. Actually, they're there at Oak Ridge right now, but anybody can download them and use them. The problem is that they're really hard to use. Yeah, this is another initiative that's going on through the Department of Energy, and they are trying to get the ISVs to write interim wrappers that will allow people to use these codes in a much easier way. And that way they can start getting them down to the smaller manufacturers.
Well, and in fact, this was the nut of the research that we've done together with NCMS, which is that to the extent that there is this very large technology gap that separates large manufacturers from small manufacturers, one of the problems isn't just, it goes beyond the cost of the hardware and software. It has to do with the expertise. And how do you go about creating your first digital models, coordinate them with physical testing, build faith and reproducibility of results. And, that's at the heart of a lot of these missing middle types of initiatives. When you look at how are we going to expand advanced technology to more of U.S. manufacturing.
Yeah, so the Office of Advanced Scientific and Computing Research, I love these acronyms. Anyway, OSCR, the DOE's OSCR, through the Small Business Innovative Research Topics, SBIR, another acronym, They're making grant money available to the ISVs to go ahead and provide this bridge between these very difficult codes and the manufacturers, especially the smaller manufacturers, that can make really great use of them. So that's underway right now as well. Good things are happening.
You know, there was another interesting story, this one not with the government hook to it, but a story about bicycle wheels you guys wrote up a few weeks ago having to do with CFD. Now, I know when I was a kid, I had a bicycle, and I have a feeling those wheels were not designed with CFDs. But now, I mean, it's quite sophisticated
stuff. I'm watching a lot of bicycles go by me on the boardwalk right now, gentlemen.
Well, they've been designed by using HPC.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, nobody realizes this, but yeah, the sophistication of what's going on. But why don't you tell us a little bit about that story? That was quite an interesting item there.
Yeah, this is a small firm named Intelligent Light, and they have one CFD guy on staff, and they're working with another company called Zip Wheels. And anybody in the bike world will know about Zip because they are the premier wheel provider. So anyway, what they're doing is modeling the vortexes and the airflow over these wheels. If you change the size of the spokes, the rim, et cetera, the hub, this sort of thing, it all changes. And what they've done is been able to model the entire bike now, so they can see what's going on. It helps that the CFD guy at Intelligent Light is a triathlete. He's got a little stake in the ground here. Anyway. It was a fascinating story, and it's a great. One of the other reasons it's interesting is because that they are using a company, R-Systems, who are actually in the cloud.
Right. R-Systems. Right. They're famous for doing that. So they're actually doing the CFD not on their own site. They're actually just doing that remotely as well.
Outsourcing through our systems. And these things with wheels, we've seen similarly complicated models with tires in cars. Or even if you go to something like a ship or a boat, the interface where they meet the water is very difficult. It's these kind of interface applications that can be very difficult to model.
Yeah, one of the other interesting, some of the really interesting applications that you guys have been covering lately is in 3D printing. You hear about this, and I always wonder, like, what could that possibly be? I mean, 3D printing, but actually, it's becoming much much more commonplace. Why don't you tell us about some of the coverage that you've given to this?
Oh, yeah, 3D printing. It's one of my favorites. It's also known as additive manufacturing. Yeah, okay. You take an inkjet printer, although they're much more complex than that at this point in time, but you take an inkjet-like printer and you use a thermoplastic and you print out whatever you want based upon your CAD drawings, your 2D or 3D CAD drawings, and you print out whatever you want on the spot. So you can do rapid prototyping, and it's been used for that for about the last 5 or 6 years. But today, because of what's going on with the technology, they're going direct to finished products. So we just had a great story about an airplane that was made over in England. It's a little drone, an unmanned vehicle, and the whole thing was designed, printed, and flown within 5 days.
Wow.
It's incredible.
How big is this plane?
It's like a size of a very, Addison, you can relate to this, it's the size of a very large seagull.
And so they just printed this.
Does it steal your French fries when it goes by?
Oh, yeah, you bet, man. If you don't give up your French fries, it'll
wipe you out.
It's got weapons platforms on it.
Well, that's amazing that you can like print out something the size of a drone plane with essentially a printer.
It's more amazing than you can ever imagine. It's what's going on. There was a wonderful story in New Scientist about the airplane itself, and they had a little sidebar, and it's the many flavors of printing in 3D. And here's some of the things you can do in 3D printing: whole apartment buildings. Houses, you print them like a layer cake. They're not doing it yet, but that's coming down the pike. You can now
that's
get
incredible.
3D, isn't that amazing? You can now buy these little 3D printers for about $1,000 or $1,300. So the home market's going to be opening up. There's a little thing called a RepRap. It's a self-assembling printer. It actually prints its own parts, so it can make a copy of itself. And here's one you like, Michael. You can print chocolate.
Chocolate. There you go. Well, that's the important one, right?
Yep. Get a little printer, and just when you get a craving for chocolate, or you want to give your wife something really neat, you can design your own chocolate and print it out and chomp it down.
Well, that's useful because my wife is not interested in drone planes. I can tell you that. So.
Well, that's the smallest printer is about a milk carton size, and that's to make really tiny parts with very complex geometries like jewelry and so forth. They're very small parts for tiny engines. And then at some point in time, the ink is going to be human cells. So if you get in trouble from too much tippling on the boardwalk, you can print yourself a new liver.
Ocean City's a dry town, John.
That's right. I remember. Anyway, those are just a few examples of some of the 3D printing that's either going on now or coming up in the future, and it's pretty wild stuff.
That's amazing stuff. I mean, we just associate, manufacturing with sort of this, blue collar technology and sector, and there's all this stuff going on. I think that's just amazing now that you guys are reporting on. What are you guys working on down the pike? Any interesting stories coming up that we can look forward to there?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm working on one right now from Plastic Technologies Inc. And I like this one a lot too. They're using FEA, fine element analysis, and to develop these packaging products in plastic. And the one I like a lot is I've just visualized like a baseball-sized container. And it's got two compartments in it. So now what you can do with this is you can put, say, a beverage and then throw in, as in some of those French fries you were talking about, you can have a Coke on the outside compartment and French fries on the inside. Or the one application they came up with right away was to put milk on the inside and on the beverage portion of it, and then chocolate chip cookies in the container. And that's why they call it the Smiler, because anybody who hears about this just smiles. So they're talking about having these things in vending machines and in convenience stores and that sort of stuff. So when people want a light snack to take to the office or a mini meal, they can just grab one of these things and off they go. So that's one of the stories that's coming up that I'm looking forward to writing.
Plastics,
yes, the future.
That's right. You remember the graduate.
One word for you.
Digital manufacturing, one word. That's the word of the day. Well, John, thanks so much for coming on the show. That was a great overview and a little teaser for some of the future stuff. I'm going to look forward to following those stories, certainly.
My pleasure.
I appreciated talking to you as well, John, and I'll also give a quick shout-out to Ocean Cafe, which is at Plymouth in the boardwalk here. Not only has excellent breakfast sandwiches, but was my virtual office for much of the week. I appreciate their bagels and their Wi-Fi.
Ask them to print out some dessert for you.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll get right on that next.
All right. Well, Addison, we'll come back next week and follow up with the news. And John, once again, thanks for being on the show and good luck to you. And obviously, we'll be following you as well. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
So long.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.